I'm here with my good friend JP. Great to see you, buddy.
Bro, it's so good to be here, man.
I've not sipped mine yet. How is it?
It's so good.
You told me that you were working on extreme honesty. How do you have those honest conversations?
2 days ago, one of my team quit. They've worked with me for 10 years.
And this was a complete surprise to you?
I'm like, where's this coming from? But this person has built all these little things up. And rather than your case, when fuck it, you're fired, they went, fuck it, I quit.
When you need to make a decision, there's three possible outcomes. The very best outcome, the very worst outcome, and probably what is the most likely outcome.
What makes you a good business person? What makes you good in going after your life goals? Decision making. What is required to make decisions fast? What do you get from fitness? Certainty and energy. Met a guy today. He gets up at 3:30 a.m. Now that's seriously extreme. And he said, I can get up at 5, but if I don't get that hour and a half to myself, I'm not as good.
Hey guys, it's Matt Haycox here and welcome to the Matt Haycox Show. We're here at home. I've not filmed at home for a long time. It's going to be a special chat, special episode tonight for a few reasons. I'm here with my good friend JP and we don't get to see each other anywhere near enough. When did I last see you? I think I last saw him probably October last year, just after we climbed Kilimanjaro. And if we get to see each other twice a year, it's probably top end. But on the times we get together, it's always, it's always great to see him. It always feels like it was yesterday, and we have some really good chats. And we always film something or record something, don't we, when we get together? Because I think the chats that we have are so beneficial for me, so interesting, educational, helpful. And I know that you guys for sure will benefit and do benefit from listening to JP's words of wisdom. We're also it's past JP's bedtime. We're filming this at 7:15, quarter to 11 at night. Don't tell his mum. And we've got Louis Trey, and we've just drunk a 1962 bottle of Rothschild. So it's been a special night for many reasons. And I thought we're going to grab a 15 or 20 minute chat, record it for you guys before we go to bed. So JP, it's great to see you, buddy.
Bro, so good to be here, man.
I've not sipped mine yet. How is it?
It's so good. I mean, yeah, the wine's amazing. Company is amazing. This is amazing. And yeah, just really happy to just be here hanging out and, like you said, having good conversation, you know. I keep my circle very small because most times, you know, people just chat shit and I just like having, good chats. So, looking forward to whatever good chat we're about to have and hit the gym tomorrow.
I tell you, I purposefully didn't write anything down to talk about because I always like our chats to be organic. And there was a few things I kind of had on my mind that I wanted to pick your brains on. And as soon as I got in the car with you earlier, you actually said something. I thought, I'm so glad you said that because I won't kind of hammer the point right now because I want to save it till we're talking about it because it was something I really had on my mind. And when we got in the car, you told me that you were working on, extreme honesty. And how your relationships were benefiting from that extreme honesty. And I thought, I'm interested to talk to you about that because one thing that's been going on at work for me over the last weeks and particularly months is I've been wanting to have a real culture shift. And it's never going to be an overnight thing. But I think a big mistake, I've learned in the last year, some of the big mistakes I've made in business, well, in my career, have been to do with culture and treatment of people and particular progression. And I think we've always had an issue in some of our businesses where, let's say you get a guy or a girl where there's a problem with them at work. Maybe these probably aren't specific work-related issues, but maybe the personality traits or personal hygiene traits or just, the way that person behaves. And a couple of people identify it, but we never address the issue at the time. And those couple of people, end up ultimately recruiting a third person to their team and a fourth person to their team. And before you know it, you wake up 18 months down the line. There's a massive divide or friction and, them against him and, her against them. And you end up with just an untenable situation where it's probably so far gone. It's not, it's never possible to fix the problem. It's not possible to, unwind the relationships and the friction that have come. Mm-hmm. And then we end up in a situation where somebody wants to leave or somebody has to get fired. And it's something as well I've been very bad at personally. I think, you know, I'm not a great manager of people. I, you know, often I'll have someone who's working for me, whether that's directly or indirectly, and they, you know, they do things wrong. And I don't particularly deal with it properly at the time, and I just kind of keep it to myself. Maybe if it's obviously, if it's caused a problem, then I might have to address it there. But if they've got something that's irritating me, I'll probably let it go and let it go and let it go. And then I wake up in 6 months' time and think, fucking sick of you, and just fire you. And none of it's good, but it all happens because of, I guess, you know, that fear of honesty. You know, that inability to deal with things at the time. And there's been a particular guy at work where over the last couple of weeks, you know, there's been problems with him. Well, it's been going on for a couple of months, but it's been identified over the last couple of weeks. I said to one of my key members of staff the other day, I said, we need to sit down and have a conversation with this guy. And they were like, oh no, it's going to be, what we're going to say, it's going to be really uncomfortable, it's going to be really awkward. And I said, look, I'm going to come with you to the conversation because, you know, ultimately, you know, these are the mistakes I've made in the past and we need to deal with this now, because if we don't deal with it now, it's going to turn into, you know, this situation where, you know, you've seen it with everybody in the past and it gets worse and worse and worse, and then this person leaves.
Too far gone, yeah.
So, yeah, we sit down with this guy and, you know, we had a chat. It actually wasn't a particularly uncomfortable conversation. It was certainly not, let's say, fun, but, you know, it was dealt with. And I would say, you know, nipped in the bud, and everybody left that room, you know, friends and fighting in the right direction, and the prospect of, you know, building competing fraction in the office was definitely completely out the window. And it's just something that's like, yeah, that's really on my mind at the moment. So, you know, honesty, like you say, dealing with problems, addressing them, you know, I guess, you know, candor, as you know, they talk about in the American management books. And you said that to me in the car tonight. I thought, you know what, I'm really glad you've said that, because I want to, I guess, pick your brains on, you know, I guess, what, you know, why the importance of honesty. I mean, obviously I know that, but, you know, for people watching or listening to this, but how do you have those honest conversations, you know, because I guess maybe it's uncomfortable to say, maybe it's uncomfortable to listen to, but, you know, we all know that the outcome is better than not having them. That was a long lead-in, wasn't it? That was a long...
Yeah. What did you say?
say that one more time.
Can we go back before the bottle of wine?
That makes sense.
I mean, yeah, it makes total sense. And, you know, I believe in the law of attraction, right? And I think it's incredible that you've asked me this. I mean, you could have asked me anything. Here's why. 2 days ago, one of my team quit. And they've worked with me for 10 years. 10 years. And I was like, what? Where is this coming from? Long story made very short, because there's another point I want to cover. They said, over the years, this and this and this has made me feel a certain way. And I'm reading this and thinking, all of that could have been solved like that if you just told me the truth.
And this was a complete surprise to you.
And this is a complete surprise to me. I'm like, where is this coming from? But this person has built all these little things up, kept them, like you said. And rather than, in your case, went, fuck it, you're fired. They went, fuck it, I quit. But I didn't have any kind of idea whatsoever that this was going on. And funny that you say, oh, you're not a good manager of people, because I'm not. You know, I can be, I don't intentionally do it, but maybe it's the South African in me. I'm very straight. I'm very, you know, I sound quite stern. I'm quite intimidating when I talk to people. Anyway, it is what it is. So the next thing I want to say is the reason why we had the conversation earlier was because I was talking to you about, you know, for everyone listening or watching, I was talking to you about my relationship with my wife. And we have an insane relationship, like honestly, over 7 years together, and I leave her, and 1 hour later, I fucking miss her. And it's because we are brutally, radically, and courageously honest with each other all the time, even when we know this might come at the expense of something. This might even come at the expense of our relationship. Because if we're not living in truth, essentially, you're living a lie, mm-hmm. to some degree, right? If you're not being radically honest, to some degree, you are living a lie. And how are you really going to have the best relationship if there's something that's not being said? And, you know, it's taken a lot of courage. I mean, I won't speak for Jules. it's taken a lot of courage from me to be radically honest.
You didn't do this in the earlier stages of the relationship?
No, I've always been honest.
Okay.
I've always been honest. But as you find yourself in a relationship, you know, let's look at most relationships. People go into a relationship, they go through the puppy dog phase or puppy love phase, and then that starts to go away. And then you start missing the things that you usually love, or you start thinking, man, what's missing in my life? I just say it. I say, look, I want to be freer. I want more travel. I don't want to feel like, I want to feel like we have separate lives. I don't, you know, I don't like being linked to someone all the time. And anyway, I don't need to go into it more now. But the reason why I've been able to do it and we've been able to do it is, well, actually, no, let me bring that back. The reason why I've been able to have honest conversations with Jules that are successful, with clients, team that are successful, with friends that are successful, the reason why I'm able to do that is because I always make sure that before I engage in the conversation about what I need to be honest about, is I make them feel or know that we're on the same side. Until I know intuitively or energetically that I know they feel like we're on the same side, I will not go to that stage. Because if you don't, let me put this down here. If you don't feel like you're on the same side, walking in the same direction, walk-in meetings are great, by the way, because you're walking in the same direction, then it's face to face. And you can say something with your best intention, with a love, you know, a loving and caring voice. But if it feels face to face, as soon as it comes across as an attack or a judgment or, you know, discrediting something, then it's not going to be a successful conversation. So that's what I always do first.
And how do you do that? I mean, how do you get someone on the same page? I mean, I had to have an uncomfortable or honest, you know, work-related conversation with someone a week or so ago. And, you know, I guess I wanted him to be at ease because I didn't want, you know, super friction, but I also wanted to make it very clear that, you know, that I wasn't happy, hence why we're having the conversation. So, I mean, we actually went for a bit of lunch, sat with a bottle of wine and had this chat. And I said, look, just to put you at ease, I'm obviously not going to be firing you, otherwise we won't be sat here drinking a 250 grand bottle of wine. However, don't let that detract away from the fact that I'm not happy and we both need to resolve some issues here before we leave.
Yeah.
Now, that might be, I'd say, a bit of an extreme example, but is that what you're talking about being on the same page before you start?
Yeah, in a way. And I would say that, you know, my opinion or view on this is probably different to yours because you probably are extreme in the way, maybe, or more extreme in the way that you communicate, meaning that you give less of a shit than I do. Is that good English? You don't care as much, right? That's not the right way to say it. You say it like it is, right? So for me, what I'll do is, since you asked me the question, is I will make it not about me. And I've done that for years. Like, if I'm going to tell you the truth, I'm going to say to you, or in a way, indirectly or directly, that, you know, this is about you. So, for example, let's use a work context that everyone can relate to. Rather than me going to Monkey over here and saying, you know, oh, I have a problem with your performance, I'm going to start the conversation with, I really believe in you. You know, I the day you came in here, I saw your potential. And I really want to see the best for you. And at the same time, I've really got to be honest. I don't see that potential in you right now, the way you're performing or the way you're showing up. I know it's in you. I know it is, but you're not showing it to me. So see how that just makes it a little bit different? Mm-hmm. Because I'm not saying it's about me. I'm saying it's about you. And then I'm saying, okay, I recognize that you can be even better than you are, as opposed to this is what you're doing wrong.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes complete
sense. Yeah, so rather than going on, I think I've got the point across there.
Yeah.
So to go back to what I shared before, make sure that you feel like you're on the same side. How do you do that? Make it not about you. That's it. Make it about them. I could use that in a personal relationship, an intimate relationship. Say, in the most simplest way of communicating it now for the sake of this conversation, I want you to be happy. And this is what it's going to take. And then you can say, this is what you're doing wrong. This is what I'm doing wrong. I'm not getting enough. This is what I want. But start it with, I want you to be happy and I know you can be happier. And if it means I need to change or you need to change, whatever, that comes after. But it's the intention is, it's not about me, it's about you. And then thirdly, and this is something that I love to talk about in business, when I go and work, in sales companies and stuff like that, a lot of people are like, yeah, truth is our value. We're all about honesty and stuff. And people think that, not everyone, but people think that honesty is just about being honest with other people. That's the easiest way to be truthful. That's the anyone can just tell you, oh, this is what I think, or this is, you can be better, etc. That's easy to do, even if it's coming from an egoic place, an unhealthy place. What's not so easy to do is to be honest with yourself. So if you're going to live in truth or to give truth, you've also got to give it to yourself. And if you recognize that you can be better, you've got to address that as well as addressing the other person. Does that make sense? Mm. And then thirdly, the hardest part, when it comes to truth, the hardest thing to embrace is allowing others to be honest with you. Don't come tell me, Matt, as my friend, about what I can do better, and then I give you feedback and you can't take it. You know what I mean?
I find that the easiest bit.
Yeah. I love that.
The trivial example of that, but I think it's like so important. When you've got food in your teeth, when you've got a bogey hanging out your nose or something, and when you see someone else, if I'm at dinner with you, I'll always say, you've got some food there. Or if a girl's walks out the toilet and she's stuck a dress in her knickers, I'm always the first to say, sort yourself out. And people always go to me, God, how awkward. How could you say that to her? Are you kidding me? How can you not say it to her? Because, she looks an idiot, or he's got a big fucking bogey hanging out of his nose. If I was that person, I want to be told. And I find listening to the stuff the easiest bit of it all.
And that's interesting. I mean, we've not had this conversation before, and it's interesting that you say that, because people don't get it. A lot of people don't get it. Like, I'm like, tell me what I've done wrong. Just tell me so I can learn from it. Tell me how I can be better. Now, I might disagree with you. I might call you an arsehole and say you're absolutely talking bullshit. But if you're not, I want to know.
But you know what? The one sentence in what you said, which makes all the difference, I think, between the people who want to hear it and the people who don't want to hear it, is you said, I want to be better.
Yeah.
Now, whether I want to be better means, I want to be more educated, or I want to be more fitter, or I want that piece of spinach out of my teeth. All of that is, you want to be better, therefore you are ready to listen. And I guess the people who don't want to hear it probably just have the arrogance of thinking they can't be any better.
Yeah, I worked with a recruitment company in Germany for a year, and I'd have like bi-monthly or quarterly visits with them. I couldn't remember. And there was this gentleman there, lovely gentleman, hardworking, etc. But everyone would be like, I'd be like, what's the smell? And they'd be like, oh, it's his breath. And everyone's like this. I was like, just fucking tell him. Like, and then I had a conversation with three or four of the lads that worked there on the floor. And I was like, look how all of you guys are like, oh. I'm like, look what it's doing to your energy. Like him having bad breath. Just tell him he has bad breath so he can fix it. Anyway, I found a way to weave it into one of my group conversations. And I said, oh, look, like if you have bad breath, I'm going to tell you, you have bad breath.
Oh, but it ended up being you telling him.
Oh, I told him, yeah. On the floor in front of everyone.
How did he take it?
He got rid of his bad breath.
But he was thankful?
He didn't know. No, he didn't respond or anything like that. But he didn't know. Sometimes people, what's that saying? You don't know what you don't know. And some people just don't change not because there's something wrong with them, or they're stupid, or they're incapable. They just lack awareness. That's it. Now, sometimes sometimes people behave in a certain way, not because they lack awareness, but because they lack responsibility. Now, that's a whole nother subject, right? Like you and I over dinner spoke about someone that potentially has a lack of responsibility, personal responsibility or professional responsibility. Mm-hmm. But it could also be, for this gentleman that we were talking about, it's lack of awareness. And someone just needs to be radically, brutally honest with him and say, look, this is how we observe you showing up, and you can be better. And we want the best for you. We want the best out of you, but we're just not seeing that. And, you know, you not being your best is not good for us. So we'll need to have a conversation. But yeah, I love talking about those three areas of truth. And I've done my very best to, Matt, you know me, anything I ever talk about, I live it. And if I don't live it, I'm not going to talk about it. You know what I mean? I'm not going to talk about scaling businesses and stuff because I don't live that. I've not done it. I've not experienced it myself. And for me, this truth model works incredibly well to build very strong relationships and to sustain those relationships, not just to be truthful in the beginning with yourself, with them, and allow them to be honest with you, but to continue growing that relationship, because no relationship should be here and then stay at the same level. All relationships should grow. If you're not growing in your relationships, why are you there? Whether a relationship like this or, you know, with a partner, get out, because you could grow with someone else. You only have, you know, 86,400 seconds every day. So to be able to grow in a relationship, keep being honest with yourself. What do you need from the relationship? What do you want from the relationship? Keep being honest with the other person and allow them to be honest with you. That's the hardest part.
How do you decide when enough's enough? You know, that you know, you've tried and you can't fix it. You can't grow together anymore, whether that's professional or personal.
It's not the answer that most people want. It probably might not be the answer that you want, but it's just trusting your own intuition. Yeah. That's it. When you know, you know.
I think that's the answer. Yeah, well, that's probably the answer to most things, isn't it, really?
When you know, you know. That's it. And people try to intellectualize it, to justify it. But if you go from here, all the busyness and the, you know, the conversation going backwards and forwards, and you just, you know, not to sound too spiritual, but you just sit, meditate, go for a walk, and you bring yourself from here back to your heart. This is where you know. This is where you think you know stuff. This is where you know stuff. And if you can just through breath work or meditation or just sitting with a cup of coffee in the morning or tea or whatever, and just take a few deep breaths and just ask your intuition, right? Well, how does this make me feel? You know, there's a saying, if it feels bad, it's probably wrong. If it feels right, if it feels good, it's probably right. And I've lived my life by that. You know, it sounds simple, but I have lived my life and I've made most of the decisions in my adult life based on one thing alone. And that's how I feel, intuition.
Do you find decision-making easy for you? I mean, this is something I, you know, talk about with, you know, people. I mean, certain people I work with or certain people I'm friends with in you know, my personal life, I mean, they just find it impossible to make a decision. And I find it very easy. And my simplistic theory that I always apply is, when you need to make a decision, there's, you know, there's three possible outcomes. You know, there's the very best outcome, the very worst outcome, and probably what is the most likely outcome. And as long as the most likely one is all right and the worst one isn't utterly catastrophic, just fucking get on with it.
Exactly.
And for me, you know, for me, it's that simple, because, you know, there aren't many decisions that are, you know, let's call it life and death, you know, whether that's personally life and death or business life and death, you know, from a financial perspective. You know, there's not many things you can't recover from.
You're going to learn a lot in the process. You know, if you have a failure, you make a bad decision, you're still going to learn something from that, because you said it's not going to be catastrophic. No one's going to die, or, you know, generally speaking, most decisions you can, or most things you can recover from. But in that recovery, you're going to end up, when you get back to where you were, you're going to be better off than where you were the first time, because now you've gone through this whole experience. I mean, you know,
and is that your decision making process?
100%. Yeah, I just don't fuck around. I don't waste time with decisions. Life is short, and, you know, what's the worst thing that can happen? I learn some shit along the way, and you know what? Actually, my life university has been everything I've ever tried, and it hasn't worked, because for us to figure out what we want, we need to know what we don't want. For us to figure out what works, as in what works for us, we need to discover what doesn't work for us. For us to know who we want to be with, we need to go through all the trials and tribulations and the adventures and you know, horrific stories of figuring out who we don't want to be with. And until you learn all of that, Do you really know that you're with the best person? Do you really know you're making the best decisions? Do you really know you're doing the right thing for you if you haven't done all of that work?
I was reading...
In my opinion, I don't.
No, I was reading a couple of Jeff Bezos books, you know, shareholder letters and stuff this summer. And he, I mean, he's massive on experimenting and risk-taking and, you know, some substantial risk-taking. And, you know, one of the things he was talking about was obviously the importance of experimenting, the things to be learned from experimenting, but that... by definition, for it to be an experiment, you can't know what the outcome is going to be. If you know what the outcome is going to be, it's not an experiment. And just to, you know, and he talks about one-way doors and two-way doors, and that's what we were talking about the fact that, you know, most decisions are reversible in some way. That you know, there's not many decisions in life and business that are one-way doors. You know, when you've gone through it, there's no going back. You know, most are two-way doors, and you can.
I like that. I've never heard that before.
You can learn and reassess.
Yeah.
So when we're in the car, you said something else to me as well. I'm thinking, he must have, even though I've not told
my him intuition.
Anything I want to talk about, he must have been psychic about tonight. But you said to me, how's your exercise going? I've seen you, you know, exercising for a bit on Instagram and then not for a while, then on and then off. And I was saying that, you know, it's not often that I particularly enjoy the act of the exercise, but you know, I challenge anyone to find me a person that doesn't feel better after they've done the exercise. And obviously, I know, you know, exercise and fitness is, you know, is your whole life, but you know, there's someone particularly in my business at the moment we were talking about over dinner who has started exercising, you know, quite regularly this year. You know, having never really done it at all before, and they are very much, you know, like a new person. You know, I mean, a whole new vigor to life and work and psyche and everything. And I'm absolutely convinced that, you know, a large part of that is down to the change in exercise and fit and fitness. And I know you say, you know, unless you've got this bit right, then nothing else can be right. And we were talking about some other people that, you know, I'm having problems with in one way or the other at work. And yeah, I think a lot of those work problems ultimately stem from their personal life problems. And I think those personal life problems could be probably 80% fixed if they sorted out their health and their fitness. And it's just so important all the way through life. And you know, I'm someone, I guess, saying this, drinking a glass of brandy and not being an uber healthy person. You know, I don't, you know, preach exercise and live and breathe it, but I just know how much better I feel about life and waking up in the morning, you know, when I've done it.
So you're already one step ahead of people that don't know that, because like we shared before, some people just lack awareness, right? They don't understand the connection there between fitness and feeling good. But you already have the awareness. You're just not consistent in acting on that awareness. That's, you know, the only difference is, you know, there's being aware, acting on the awareness, and then being consistent in your actions, but you're in that kind of middle ground. Is that fair to say? Yeah.
100%.
And, you know, with regards to fitness, when people think that fitness is about fitness, they're seriously missing the point, because fitness is about energy. Fitness is about certainty. Or let's go back to what we were talking about before, decision-making. Right? What makes you a good business person? What makes you good in, I guess, relationships too? What makes you good in going after your life goals? Decision-making. The ability to make decisions fast. What is required to make decisions fast? Certainty. Certainty and energy. What do you get from fitness? Certainty and energy. No one has ever come to me and said, and I very much doubt that this has ever happened to you, that you finish a workout and you feel less energized for the day. I'm not talking about the physical exhaustion. Yep. I'm talking about general life energy. You feel less energized and you feel less certain. Basically, you come out of a workout feeling down and in the dumps. It just doesn't happen. Yep. It's the opposite. So you do fitness. It's free. Doesn't take any time. You have more certainty, more energy. you have a higher ability or a faster ability to make decisions or the best decisions because your mind and body is in the best state that it can be. I mean, it's just, it's better for your day-to-day life. It's better for your career. It's better for your relationships, better for your future. Met a guy today. He gets up at 3:30 a.m. Now that's seriously extreme. And he runs a very successful fitness business. And he said, I can get up at 5. But if I don't get that hour and a half to myself, I'm not as good. He didn't say more than that. And I just literally went like that. I said, bro, that is on point. You can get through your life. You can do a good job. You can do a great job. But if you take that time out for yourself to work on yourself, you're going to be better every time. And that's what you said. It makes me feel better. So the fact that, you know, and I'm quite like obsessed about this. The fact that people say I don't have time to exercise, in my head, I can't afford to exercise. In my head, and excuse my language, I'm like, you can't fucking not afford it.
Yeah,
because you need energy and certainty and good decision making to be the best person that you can be. So like now saying that, if you wake up, I'm talking about you now, Matt Haycox, yeah? You're passion driven, you're always on it, right? Whenever I'm with you, you're always on. If you don't feel like you lack energy and certainty, and I'm speaking to everyone else, not Max, if you don't feel like you lack certainty or energy or passion, fucking just crack on with your day. But if you're lacking that and you're not exercising, you're a fool.
Do you think there's a big difference between whether you do your exercise in the morning or whether you do the exercise at the night?
I think it's whatever works for you, whatever feels right for you, going back to intuition. But generally, I would say set yourself up to win. You know, what does your day require energy? I can tell you now that people that I've worked with over the years that have gone on a red eye and haven't slept throughout the night and they do a workout in the morning, they'll say, man, previously when I've done that flight, I've been tired all day. But then I worked with you, I forced myself to go to the gym and I forgot that I was tired because it gives you more energy. Fitness gives you more energy, even though you're using taking your energy. Yeah. It's crazy. I don't know the science behind it, you know, in full transparency. I just know that when you exercise, you have more energy. And that energy is then currency. Because you're giving that energy to everyone else. And whatever you're giving out, you're getting back. So how much do you want to give out? Well, as much as possible, as much as you want to get. I never go to a meeting without exercising or meditating. And when I say exercising or meditating is I feel, what do I need right now? Do I need energy or do I need presence? And if I'm going to a Zoom meeting, I've been busy doing other stuff. I might meditate at home for 5-10 minutes. Because that's the energy that I need. I need presence. I need to feel centered, grounded. But I feel a bit, I literally will just go to my garage, hit the bag, go for a run, ride on my bike, whatever.
Well, that's definitely one of my biggest problems, you know, being able to focus enough on each individual thing. Because I've always got so much going on in my head, you know, so much going on in my life that, you know, and I'm terrible with my telephone because I'm, you know, always, you know, worrying about a WhatsApp or an email. You know, when I sit down at a meeting, I mean, I can't leave my phone in the bag because, you know, I'm thinking about Killy. You know what I was like when we went up there and I was worrying about not having 4G. But, you know, I've got to put my phone upside down on the table so I can't see it because if I was talking to you and I had it up like that, I just wouldn't be able to concentrate enough. And I think, yeah, that's one of my... I guess goals for myself, you know, to get to being, you know, more present in each situation. Yeah. It's just something I'm not making excuses, but it's just something I find tough because I do have so many things all over the place. And I guess until I fix a lot of those things, I'm always going to have too much going on in my head. Yeah. Now I know they need fixing, and I know that I've got a plan of how I'm going to fix them. It's just not an overnight miracle.
Can I ask you a question? Mm. And first of all, I agree with you. Before I ask you the question, you know, you want to be able to choose subconsciously and consciously when you give your energy to this person and when you give your energy to that person, rather than being thrown shit all the time, and not having a choice. So when we met up today, right, I got to Matt's place, we hopped in my car, we had to go to the shop, buy some food and stuff, and we're in the supermarket, and we're having a good chat in the supermarket, right? I felt like a proper couple, right?
You're pushing the trolley, I'm filling it.
It was perfect. And then Matt all of a sudden just, boom, he just pulls out his phone. I said, oh, I forgot about that, right? And I was thinking in that moment, what I'm going to ask you now is the question. Would anyone have died? Would anything have changed if you just didn't answer that phone until we got back into the car?
Well, I think we learned.
I didn't care. I was thinking, you're completely right. Concentration.
I think we learned climbing Killy that, you know, no one would die and nothing would fundamentally change.
Yeah.
If I'm uncontactable for an hour a day or even a week, I guess. I know the message that I looked at when we were in the supermarket and I didn't reply to. And yes, you know what? Completely, it wouldn't have made any difference if I hadn't done it until tomorrow.
Yeah.
However, it was a message relating to a very problematic situation I'm dealing with at the minute. Now, yes, you're right, I could have dealt with it either an hour later or probably 8 hours later. But, you know, I take all these issues very personally, very much to heart, even though leaving it a few hours, I wouldn't have made it go wrong. But if this particular problem did go wrong, you know, it's a big fucking problem.
Well, let's forget 8 hours or the next day.
Mm.
I believe, just based on my experience, that if you saw it and put it away for 10 minutes, over time, you'd be less consumed by your problems because you'd be conditioning your mind to say, here's a problem, but it doesn't consume me. I will get to you when I'm ready. Put your phone back in your pocket.
I've got to say, as much as I do always look at the phone, always deal with the emails and stuff, you know, pretty much immediately, I actually don't want to. You know, when we were up Killy and, you know, that first few hours was horrendous for me, you know, not being able to have access to the telephone, you know, feeling completely out of touch. But as the hours and the days went on, it was actually lovely because like a massive part of my day is always pulling my phone out, looking at it, you know, like what messages have come through, what emails have come through. But when we're up there, I never even bothered pulling it out to look at because I know there weren't going to be any messages
because there's no signal.
And listen, if I had a choice, that is a position I want, you know. I think I remember saying when we were climbing there that the fact that I was so on edge about my phone or lack of it all the time, you know, really made me realise that I didn't have enough people in the right positions in the businesses to be able, you know, to be able to take that stress off me, and that it was a problem I was identifying at the time and going to try and fix. And I, you know, that view hasn't changed. It's just been incredibly difficult, I guess, over the last year or so to find the right people to fill those positions. But yeah, I mean, 100%, I would love a life without a telephone. Mm. You know, whether it's being with a friend, being on a date night, you know, watching a video with Harley. I don't want to have my fucking telephone, but even when I put it over there on charge, I'm always walking over to look at it to worry.
You know what, bro? I think it's just an old habit.
Mm.
It's just an old habit. And how you know, let's look at addicts, right? Because in a way it's an addiction.
Mm.
Addicts, how you stop addicts from taking a drug is you can't tell them to stop and how important it is. You've got to replace it with something else, whether that's faith, religion, a good, you know, knitting class or whatever, a community, it has to be replaced with something else. So here's an idea. Every time you have an urge to pick up your phone, say, now that I've had this thought, I'm going to wait 5 minutes. Now imagine if you just built that up, let's say over 30 days or 60 days, you had conditioned yourself to every time you get a buzz, whatever, you're just going to wait 5 minutes. What are you conditioning yourself to do? Wait 5 minutes? No, it's way bigger than that. You're conditioning yourself to not react. And eventually you'll just start realizing, actually, I can wait. I can wait. I can wait. And that's the first start. Rather than saying, oh, not touch it for 8 hours or climb another mountain, it's just changing the association from when there's a buzz, I must react, to I react when I feel like reacting. And you can still check your phone every 15 minutes, every 30 minutes, but that's probably less than you check it, right?
Mm.
Yeah. And you're doing it proactively rather than reactively. And that's a very different feeling, because you're saying, I'm checking my phone because I want to check my phone, versus I feel like I need to check my phone. And all words carry frequency. All thoughts carry frequency. If you say, I need to check my phone, I have to check my phone, I should check my phone, feel the frequency of those words. But if you're like, no, I'll check it when I want to check it, it's very different. And honestly, I think if you practice that, the time between you checking your phone over 60 to 90 days will get longer and longer and longer and longer. And you're not going to undo a habit of 20 years, whatever, in even 3 months. But it's just start with that 5 minute thing. And, you know, sometimes I teach this in coaching, right? Sometimes for us to let something go, we have to send it away with gratitude. You checking your phone every second of the day is part of what made you so incredibly successful, because you don't delay, you don't procrastinate, you're on things all the time. But sometimes things serve us, people serve us, habits serve us up until a certain point where you have to say, thank you, but no, thank you, this no longer serves me anymore. You know, I want more peace, I want more time with my daughter, etc. Thank you, you did serve me. And that's a part of the letting go process. And then you can be like, okay, I'm grateful for that, but it doesn't actually serve me anymore. And here's how it doesn't serve me anymore. It's taking me away from my daughter, for example. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, completely. And I mean, I think it was yesterday or the day before. So actually, you know what it was? I was going to pick Harley up. I had to pick her up from the yard. And I was leaving town. And just as I was getting to my car, my phone died. Didn't have a charger in the car. I was going to have to come past this house anyway on the way to the yard, but it was going to take me 20 minutes to get here. Let's say another 15 minutes from here to go and pick her up from the yard. But the 20 minutes here was the most anxious 20 minutes of my life, not having the telephone. And I stopped here so that I could plug my phone in here just to charge it for 5 minutes, so I could get it turned on, so I'd actually have some charge on the 15 minutes of the journey to go and pick her up. And I'm thinking, Matt, you are fucking nuts. Like, you know, and this was not for reasons of, oh, I need my phone to be on so I can ring Harley and tell her to come outside. This was just me thinking, fuck, 35 minutes in the car at, you know, 5 p.m. in the afternoon. I need to be doing some business. And it's frazzles my head. It's not good.
No, it's not healthy based on what you're saying. It doesn't sound very healthy. And I think in a way, it's just an addiction, you know. And look, every addiction is doing things that we don't want to do, and we keep doing it, even though we don't want to do it. But there's a reason why we're doing it. You know, what's the need that you're getting met? Every addiction is meeting a need, whether it's a sex addiction, a misery addiction, because we all know someone that has an addiction to misery, no matter how much help you give them, because they're getting something fed, they're getting attention, whether it's cigarettes, alcohol, or your phone. Yes, I said you have before, you have to replace that habit with another habit, but also you have to understand, why is that addiction there? So maybe think about, right, what's the addiction that I have? You know, don't put too much emphasis on the word addiction, because I think of you as like an incredibly strong person and very strong-minded person. But in terms of a habit, a habitual thing in your life, well, what's this addiction there? Why do I keep going back there? Is it from, you know, is it from not being on top of things because of failures that you had in the past and not wanting that to happen again or to resurface, that, no, I have to be on top of everything all the time. You know, that's something to look at. Or is it just a bad habit, you know, from just bad practices over years, just always being on your phone? Just identifying. I mean, if you had to take a guess, if I may ask you, like, where do you think that started? Like, you feeling like you need to be on your phone all the time?
I don't honestly know. I mean, I can't remember back to 15 years ago, 10 years, I can't remember what, you know, if I've gotten worse over time. I mean, I certainly know there was a period when I was with a particular girl where, you know, if I hadn't replied to a message in 3 seconds, you know, she was ready to kick the door.
Oh, there it is.
kick the door down and think I was up to no good. But I'm not gonna use that as an excuse. That was
So I know definitely that's not the case for you, but that's an example of a trigger that can create a habit, a bad habit. Mm. But there must be something. There must be something like that. Or maybe it's just over time.
I just think, like I said, if I had to find an answer for you, I'd put it down to the fact that so much of what I do at work over the years has been time-sensitive stuff.
Mm.
You know, a problem where, you know, if something isn't answered now, then the outcome is pretty bad.
Yeah.
And the people who've been in the businesses have been unable to make the decision or unable to make the right decision, yeah, and had to contact me. And because, you know, that has been much more than a once occasion, you know, has happened dozens, if not hundreds of times over the last 10 or 15 years. I guess it's probably started to push me into the habit of, needing to deal with things there and then, worrying to deal with things there and then. I think that's probably a bit of the negative answer. Probably one of the positive answers is that, you know, I kind of pride myself on the speed that I do reply to emails, reply to WhatsApps and stuff, you know, when something matters. Probably a bit of everything, like you say.
Yeah.
It's habitually formed, you know, a little bit more each day, whether it's for a good reason or whether it's for a bad reason. And, you know, 15, 20 years down the line, we are where we are.
And you know, that's the thing. It's not a good or a bad thing. Nothing in the life, my opinion, nothing in life is a good or a bad thing. It's just a thing.
Mm.
It's how you perceive it, whether that's sniffing stuff, doing stuff, saying stuff, picking up your phone. It's whatever it's how it makes you feel. Like, here's an example, right? You're on your phone all the time. You want to problem solve. You pride yourself on reacting fast, etc. Elon Musk said, like, early 30s, right? He's done a few things in the world. Elon Musk said in his mid-30s, I don't care. Call me 3 a.m. in the morning. If it's to solve a problem, I'll answer. Like 10 years later, he said, no one should work as hard as me. It's very unhealthy and I don't recommend it. So it's like, you know what I mean? You can have one view and then 10 years later, you can have a completely different view. And that's just life. You know, nothing, it's the law of impermanence. Things are always changing, evolving, dying, you know, new ideas being born.
Well, new ideas happen, but also, you know, how you want to behave in situations happen, don't they?
Exactly.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, you want to work like a beast, maybe from 18 to 40, and then at 40, maybe you've got the, you know, you've got the money you wanted, or you've achieved what you wanted, or you've just had a complete change of heart, and it's time.
I was listening to a podcast on the drive here, right? Nice long drive here. Love long drives. I was listening to a podcast from Impact Theory with Tom Bilyeu, and he was interviewing, I can't remember his real name now, but the rapper Logic, super, super intelligent guy. No doubt Callum knows him, right? this is something Hall or something like that. Do you know his name, Callum? No? Bobby someone, anyway. And he was saying, you know, my goals in my 20s were go, 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 attack, 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 buy my shit. Now I'm 31. It's, I just want to be with my kid and my wife. You know, just things change. We change. So the question you want to ask yourself, and the question I will continue to ask myself for the rest of my life, is what I'm doing, and we discussed this over dinner, is what I'm doing and how I'm showing up in the world, is it coming at the expense of something? And if it's not, keep doing it. But if you know that it's come at the expense of something, your joy, your presence, your how grounded and still or calm you feel at home, or the quality of time you get with your daughter, then that has to be addressed. But if you're like, no, it doesn't come at the expense of something, then don't stop doing it. You know what I mean?
100%. Well, listen, I'm conscious that you're going to be dragging me out of bed early in the morning for one of your yoga sessions runs, and I might get the luxury of a sauna and steam at the end. So I'm going to let us both get to bed.
It's like 1 a.m.
It's quite late. It's definitely late for you. It's not too bad for me either. But listen, it's been great to chat. And, you know, actually, as we were getting to the back end of this conversation, I was thinking it's probably one of the most important chats of so many aspects or so many learnings, and I'm actually going to ask Callum to send me the audio to this pretty much as soon as we record it, so I can listen to it again myself. Wow. over the next day or two, because you said some really important things and some things that I'm definitely going to be using over the next couple of days when I need to have conversations with people. So thanks for being here, buddy. Thanks for inspiring and educating me as always. And guys, I'm sure you guys get to benefit and learn as much as I do when JP's here, so make sure you give him a follow. I never know your Insta, it's got too many underscores. Where do
it's
people
just
find
my initials, JPDV. It's an underscore between each, but if they type in JPDV, it comes up.
So yeah. make sure you follow JP. Guys, if you're listening to this on iTunes, you can see all my video versions on YouTube, on Instagram, on Facebook, and even on TikTok. And if you're listening to any of those, so if you're watching those, make sure you go over to iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to your audio podcast. Leave me a review, leave me a like, leave me a comment. That is all I ever ask of you guys. And until the next time, thanks for watching and thanks for listening.